you know, after covering the NFL, entering my 40th year covering it, I more than ever, man, I just need the off season.
No days off. No days off. No days off. No days off. No days off.
It never ends. Okay, Bill, we got you. I think I get the point. Peter King, Mike Florio, PFT Live, coming to you live from my basement because there's a technical issue that has knocked my main connection completely and totally offline. Satellite location today, and who knows, maybe beyond. Good morning, Peter King. Nice to see you on this fine Friday morning.
Good morning, Mike Florio. So, Mike, this is my last time on your show until, I believe, early August, maybe late July. And I think there's one thing we need to accomplish, and that is to sort of kind of praise you for making sure that no matter what time of year it is, you talk with the headline-y urgency that really creates a buzz, just like Kramer would say, about the NFL. And I'm always impressed with that, whatever day it is, May 19th, how you can come up with a show for 2 hours. It's just, it's quite an accomplishment on your part.
Well, the reality is, at this time of year, it becomes a show about nothing. You just take the nothing and you try to turn it into something. But I appreciate that. I appreciate that. And look, we have built a beast that needs to be fed, and you either feed the beast or the beast feeds on you. So we keep it going. We keep it rolling. Hashtag no days off, except when we take a day off. Now, you're on an extended break from Football Morning in America, and since I have foolishly made my email address available to the world, I am now the first line of defense for anything and everything about which people have concerns. I have been fending off the pitchforks and torches all week over the Peacock exclusive playoff game, January 13. Yes, Peacock, home of an exclusive wildcard playoff game, and it's only $4.99 a month, so quit complaining about it. But they keep complaining to me. I also got multiple emails expressing concern for your whereabouts when there was no column on Monday. And I have a feeling that every Monday between now and the return of your column, I am going to get emails from someone expressing concerns about the whereabouts of a Mr. Peter King.
Well, here I am. And by the way, Mike, first of all, I've never taken 11 weeks off in my life. I just kind of want to see what it's like. I was with family in Berkeley, California last weekend. My daughter, Mary Beth, and her family are in Brooklyn, where my disemboweled head is this morning. But I just wanted to see what it was like. And I just want to see what else there is in life, quite honestly. But the one thing, I really am glad you brought up the Peacock thing. Because I got maybe 10 emails or so. I'm sure you got 400. But I just sort of have this feeling, Mike, along with this ESPN news of yesterday, as we sit here right now, ESPN basically now saying that it eventually may, likely will, become a streamer because that is what is happening with television. And look, I understand that people don't like paying for something that forever they got for free. I totally understand it. However, I would ask this question. Did you really get it for free? Did you really get all the football games for free? Or unless you have the strongest set of antennae and rabbit ears in history that somehow get cable and so can get ESPN and whatever else over the years the NFL games have been on, it hasn't been free. And granted, this is going to be an extra whatever that you'll have to pay. And I understand the outrage and the disappointment and all that. But I guess I would just say that it just isn't our birthright to get things the way they have always been gotten, period. And I don't know. Look, this is not favorable to anybody who clearly does not want to pay for another streaming service. I totally get it. And I'm not trying to, you know, diss anybody or anything like that. But this is the future. Like it or not, this is the way television is going. It's going to streaming. It's not just going to be Amazon Prime on a Thursday night. The next television contract that the NFL has, the TV landscape is going to be monumentally different in 8 years when the new TV negotiations begin. And so, and I'm not saying, hey, this is a warning. This is a shot across the bow. I don't mean that. But what I mean is that we're in a world that is changing before our very eyes. And why do you think the NFL put the Thursday night package with a streamer? Because they see the future in the NFL, not just for whatever it is, 16 regular season games on a Thursday night and then a Black Friday game. It isn't only for that. It is essentially, eventually, I believe, this is the way people are going to consume television, by streaming.
And Peter, I think it's not just that the NFL sees the future. I think the NFL is trying to force the future. The NFL is trying to compel people to change their habits now, to make the shift now to non-cable, non-satellite packages, where it's a layering of whatever you choose to have. That's the good news here. And I think people are conditioned to get free stuff because the internet was free for so long. And because it was free from the get-go, oh, I don't want to pay for anything. But nothing really is free. To your point about even if people have a great set of antenna, rabbit ears, whatever, to take the signals out of the sky and get great three-letter broadcast content, you still have to pay for the TV. That's not free. There's a cost to all of it. And if you can take the monthly charge that you're paying for all those hundreds of channels where you only watch five of them at the most, and you can pick and choose what you want, that's freedom for the consumer. And when you consider that Peacock has more live sports than any other streamer and does have an exclusive wild card playoff game Saturday night, January 13, and exclusively week 16, Saturday night, Bills at Chargers, not exactly a game you want to miss two nights before Christmas Day. It's a pretty good deal at $4.99, not $14.99, not $19.99, $4.99 a month, the cheapest of all the streaming services out there. And people think that once you have a relationship with a streaming service, it's like till death do us part, like it's too hard to dump it. Oh, I can't get another one. You don't have to get another one. It can be a zero-sum game. You can dump one and pick up Peacock. That's your choice as a consumer. So, yes, I have been hearing that all week. I'm glad that we agree. You were slightly more eloquent than I was when explaining it the other day, but it really is beyond me that people would be upset about something like this because the future is now. It's not some vague notion 8 years out. It's already here. It's just a question of when consumers are going to embrace the fact that the future is now. For the Panthers, the future is now. How's that for a segue as we get to the first topic? Finally. And, you know, we didn't do Sims and I have been burning about 15 minutes. So we're ahead of schedule. We're on pace. We are within our budgeted time. First topic, Panthers, their quarterback. The future is now for them with Bryce Young. Josh McCown, quarterback's coach, in his first year as a coach after being connected to head coaching job in Houston the past couple of years. Here's McCown from yesterday on the quarterback that he'll be working with to get him ready for week one.
It's encouraging. We step into those meetings. You can tell he's digested the material. He's bringing questions. Those things are encouraging. But you have to temper the excitement. You have to, you know, to rein it in. And like I said, I think Coach Brown's done a great job of that, of helping us, you know, do that. And then the drawing on the experience of around us, you know, Frank's work with a ton of quarterbacks, and then Coach Caldwell having helped bring Peyton Manning along. So You draw on these different experiences and utilize that to kind of feel the pace of what we need to do with Bryce. Because the easy thing is to go, man, he's so smart. Yeah. Let's give it to him all. But let's build it the right way. Let's set a firm foundation so that, you know, when we do go, it's efficient and it's not all over the place.
What a benefit for Bryce Young to have Josh McCown, to have Thomas Brown as the offensive coordinator, Caldwell in the building, Frank Reich overseeing it all. You've got this cluster of offensive expertise to assist in the development of Bryce Young. It's the counter to Alex Smith's point from earlier in the week that defensive coaches are maybe not in position to properly develop a young quarterback. You can't say the Panthers don't have the coaching firepower, Peter, to get Bryce Young ready.
Well, and, you know, there's a reason why Josh McCown is on the coaching staff of the Carolina Panthers. Josh McCown would have had multiple opportunities. You know, we have heard for a long time that if the ownership had had its way, they would have made an Ursay-type move a year ago, and they would have hired Josh McCown as head coach. But it was, I mean, it's too presumptuous. It's just way too fast to put anybody in the job as an NFL head coach. Now, who knows? With some people, it might work. You just never know. But in general, the Carolina Panthers have done the absolute right thing in bringing Josh McCown on as a quarterback coach. When you have two sort of quarterback savants, quarterback experts also in the room, obviously in Frank Reich and Jim Caldwell. And, you know, it's interesting, Mike, I think this. Everybody can look at, and, you know, we've seen some of the funny photos of Bryce Young, you know, standing next to his linemen and, you know, standing next to teammates and everything. And he really is a small person for the quarterback position, for any position. And I think right now, as you just talked about this, and as I heard Josh McCown talk about this, the one thing I kept thinking to myself is, if you look at Bryce Young's career, he stepped into the huddle for the first time as a player at Alabama at 19 years and 3 months old. And he had success in relief appearances, you know, relieving Mac Jones almost from the start. And you ask yourself, man, this guy playing in the SEC and going up, playing on the road in Missouri and at Tennessee and at LSU, at Arkansas as a freshman, a true freshman. And then obviously coming on and winning the job and starting, I think, with a 5-game winning streak in his first year as a starter. Look, I understand everyone has questions about his size. I have questions about his size. Deep down inside, I'll bet a lot of money that Frank Reich and David Tepper, the owner of the Carolina Panthers, have questions about Bryce Young's size. However, you have seen time and again, with the exception of one shoulder injury that limited him for 2 or 3 weeks last year, you have seen Bryce Young survive against the best players in college football in the United States. And many of those players are the same ones who are going to be chasing him and covering his receivers in the NFL. So I believe that, and I believed it on draft night, I believe it today, and I'll believe it unless his career early on is absolutely derailed by injuries. This is Bryce Young's life. Just like he told me at the scouting combine, this is the size and these are the players I've been basically, you know, my whole career, high school and college. Obviously, it's a relative term, because in high school, there aren't many Calais Campbells, you know, at 6'8 and 308. But you get what he means. He's always been playing in the land of the Giants. he's always getting rushed by a bunch of sequoias. So he understands what it's going to take. Get rid of the ball fast. That is one of the things. There is no question in my mind. Frank Reich, Josh McCown, Thomas Brown, Jim Caldwell. Those are the things that they are going to be emphasizing. Get rid of the ball. Get rid of the ball. Your best friend can be a throw into the bleachers. Just get rid of the ball. And so, look, I am drinking the Kool-Aid on Bryce Young. I think he is tremendously intelligent. He is not in any way going to be intimidated by what he sees. And, you know, the signs are all good early on for them. But again, you know, the old Parcells line, they don't sell insurance for this stuff.
Well, and it's the brain power that the Panthers are banking on. You had the great breakdown a week and a half ago in your most recent Football Morning in America column about the five-man slide that he called when he was in mop-up time, up 48-17 against Tennessee, third and 12, saw where the pressure was coming from, shifted his entire line, ignored the guy who was creeping up. He knew that guy wasn't coming. Got Najee Harris, who was his running back at the time, to pick up a blitzer, did it very coolly, did it very calmly. That's the kind of presence of mind, the awareness, that processing, the S2 numbers that everyone was raving about, the ability of Bryce Young to keep his wits about him and make good decisions and get rid of the ball. Scott Fitter, the GM of the Panthers, told me that a couple of weeks ago. They believe he will get rid of the ball and not take those hits that we saw Tua Tagovailoa take on multiple occasions last year because he was holding the ball too long. Get rid of the ball, avoid the hit, and keep playing. That's going to be the key for Bryce Young. He knows it, they know it, and they're confident that they can get him to play that way. And that's the great experiment, Peter, because even in the SEC, they're not all on the defensive side of the ball, NFL caliber talent. There's going to be a weak spot there. There's going to be somebody there that isn't as big, as strong, as fast. Where he is now, everybody, especially when he shows up at practice against the Panthers, because they got a lot of guys like that on their defense. Everybody's going to be big and strong and fast, and you got to work within those lines. And I think that's where they have the highest degree of faith in Bryce Young. Whatever the lines are, he's going to figure out how to color within them and stay within them and make his decisions knowing what the realities of the situation are that he's facing.
You know, I think, Mike, we live in this sort of instant coffee society in the NFL. And, you know, I think I've told this story on this show before. In 1998, I went to San Diego Chargers training camp at the time. It was at University of California at San Diego, and that was Ryan Leaf's rookie training camp. And by the time I got there, it seemed clear that he was struggling mentally and, you know, really not looking like he was very comfortable. And I made a comment to Bobby Bethard, the general manager, late Bobby Bethard, the general manager at the time, about, nothing says you have to play him early on. And he goes, oh, no, he's starting right away. And he made the point that, you know, our fans are hungry for this. They've been waiting for a long time for a new quarterback. And Ryan's going to learn on the job. And I think for some quarterbacks, that's probably a good idea. Apparently, it wasn't the best idea for Zach Wilson. Certainly wasn't the best idea for Ryan Leaf. And we've seen over the years the different ways that teams have approached the quarterback position. You know, the Bengals, when they drafted Carson Palmer 20 years ago, they said, listen, he's not playing his rookie year. He may have played a little bit, I forget. But he's not playing his rookie year. We're going to play John Kitna, and Carson Palmer is going to carry the clipboard, study, you know, soak it in. Mike, I believe today, not just because of the advancement of the college offenses, but I believe today that if you draft a quarterback number one and you announce to your fan base he's not playing till opening day 2024 and it's May of 2023, I think the fans would say, okay, all right, well, you can have my season tickets right now. and you know, I'll come back next year. So, but listen, Frank Reich has done the right thing in this way. He has basically said, okay, listen, you know, Bryce Young might get more snaps, but the first snap in practice, probably the first snap in training camp, who knows, is going to go to Andy Dalton, because Bryce Young is going to have to earn this job. There is no doubt in my mind he will earn it unless he's physically incapable or you know, gets an injury of some sort. I think he will earn it. But the fact is, you know, times have changed over the years to the point that it's hard to imagine a quarterback, especially one with the mental capacity of Bryce Young. It's hard to imagine that he would not play very early in his rookie year. And I believe that Bryce Young is going to play opening day of his rookie year.
You make an excellent point about the draft status of the player driving the decision. And I had this conversation with Jets GM Joe Douglas last week. Because, I don't know, it could become a chicken and the egg thing, but I look at it this way. If you're going to use a top 10 pick, maybe even any first round pick, but definitely a top 10 pick on a quarterback, you'd better be ready to play him. And if you don't think he's ready to play right away, then you pick someone else. Different quarterback, different position. You can't, in this current NFL, to your point, you can't just say to your fans, here's the guy that we took with pick number one, number two, number three, whatever. You'll see him down the road next year, the year after that. No, you need to see him sooner rather than later, unless he truly is stepping in and waiting in the wings for an aging franchise quarterback like an Aaron Rodgers to exit. But then the challenge becomes getting him ready. You take him because you think he'll be ready. Then you have to get him ready. And that's where the Joe Douglas explanation dovetails with the Alex Smith point. What's your infrastructure within the coaching staff to get him ready? You've got a defensive head coach who is in his first year as an NFL head coach. And you've got, or second, I think at the time, and you've got an offensive coordinator who's never called plays. How are you going to get a young quarterback ready? I think I'm right. I think it was Robert Saleh's first year on the job when Zach Wilson was drafted. So how do you get your guy ready? You're drafting him because you think he's going to be ready. Then it's incumbent on you to get him ready. And you need to be willing, Peter, to have the awareness to pull the plug if you think he's not ready. And that was the one regret that Joe Douglas expressed to me, not having a veteran there to help get him ready, a veteran quarterback, and to be able to play in the event that Zach Wilson wasn't ready.
I think you look at it this way, Mike, and I think it's easy to look back and basically say that, okay, we made a mistake with Zach Wilson. But that to me was pretty evident all along, you know, the lack of a quality backup. And I guess I would just make this point. I think the college game has become so much like the pro game. But I think what hurt Zach Wilson in many ways is the fact that even though he burst onto the scene and played very, very well his 1 year as a full-time starter, you know, at Brigham Young, I think what really hurt him is the COVID year. And by that, I mean, if you remember in Zach Wilson's year, he essentially played a made-up schedule. Remember how they played Coastal Carolina on like a Saturday night on TV, and the game was one of those, we invented it on Monday for television, and I'm probably wrong. It might have been the previous week. I don't know. But it was a late invention. So after a bunch of teams said they couldn't play, well, then the athletic director at Brigham Young had to go out and he had to basically invent a schedule and call athletic directors at, let's say, Texas San Antonio and say, hey, you want to play a game? And so it was just, it was a rotten year to have as your only year as a full-time starter. So that's one thing. And I'd also say this. I think I'm right in saying that Mitchell Trubisky played 13 games in his lone year as a starter, and you know, at North Carolina. And if you think that that's not a big deal, I think it's just, it's an absolutely gigantic deal. And I think the one thing that no one talks about enough is the difference between, let's say, a one-year starter in college football, which is why I think Anthony Richardson is really going to have some growing pains in Indianapolis if he plays a lot and or starts right away. But if you look at the way Bryce Young was trained and the way they got him ready to play, relieved in 9 games his true freshman year, just got a taste of it, and then his last 2 years started 27 games against arguably the best schedule in college football. So Bryce Young should be ready. But my whole point is, I don't think it is smart, whether it be Zach Wilson, Mitchell Trubisky, you know, and this year Anthony Richardson. I just don't think it's smart if you think that the guy isn't ready to force him in. And look, Anthony Richardson might be the exception to the rule. But in general, I think it is smart to look at your quarterback and where he is before you say categorically, we are starting him opening day.
Well, and I think what we're doing here is concocting a stew of factors that need to be considered by the teams that hold those high picks and are evaluating quarterbacks. How much experience does he have at the college level? That is a factor, among many others, on the question of whether or not he will be ready to go and ready to thrive week one of his rookie year, or possibly be in a situation where he's overwhelmed by the game and it sets him back, if not ruins him completely, a la Giovanni Carmazzi in one preseason game back in 2000 when the 49ers played the Patriots in Canton, and Steve Mariucci and the coach of the 49ers would later say that one game ruined him. So that's part of what you need to decide when you're picking the guy that you're going to draft. How much experience does he have at the college level? One of the various factors, along with what kind of coaching expertise do I have in place to get the guy ready? Who's my veteran who can help get him ready or play if need be? All those things have to come into the equation. That brings us to a guy who sat for 3 years in Green Bay behind Aaron Rodgers. Now, Jordan Love had 38 games of experience at Utah State. Limited experience at the NFL level. We saw him pressed into duty last year during the second half of a Sunday night game between the Packers and the Eagles. He had to play in the COVID toe game for Aaron Rodgers back in 2021. And people think he stunk in that game, but he really wasn't as bad as people think. But that's where we are now in Green Bay. He's in the process of taking over. And quarterbacks coach Tom Clements, who goes all the way back to Brett Favre, he's bridged all three of these guys, from Favre to Rodgers to pushed out to comes back from retirement at Rodgers' behest, and now he's there to get the most out of Jordan Love. What Clements said this week as it relates to the overall development of Love and whether or not he can become the next guy in this chain of quarterbacks in Green Bay, great quarterbacks, Hall of Fame quarterbacks, you can't put a time on it. He needs to get out there and play. We need to see what he can do. He needs to see what he can do. You develop confidence. You figure out how to read defenses. You figure out your pre-snap adjustments, how to properly study film, how to lead others. It's something that isn't immediate, and there isn't any magical moment where you expect it to happen. But they clearly believe, Peter, he's got the potential to become the guy, or they wouldn't have done what they did 3 years ago when they traded up in round one to get him.
I think the reason, Mike, why people are a little down on Jordan Love after that Kansas City game, first of all, my recollection, the Packers only put up one touchdown in that game. It was 14-7, 13-7, something like that, and they lost the game. But I think why people would be down on him in that game is it was mostly a dink-and-dunk experience for Jordan Love. And in the NFL, you've got to be a little bit better than that. You've got to stretch the field, and he knows that. And I think he'll be much more ready to do that. I think the Jordan Love you saw in the game against Philadelphia with an excellent defense he was facing on the road, and I forget his numbers in the game, but he looked like an NFL quarterback. And when I watched that game, what I remember saying to myself is, I bet this really emboldens Brian Gutekunst and maybe even Matt LaFleur. But what it comes down to, honestly, whether you're emboldened, whether you're not, is having the trust and the faith that the Green Bay way of training quarterbacks. It's like Brian Gutekunst told me a couple of weeks ago. He said, we believe in a certain way. You draft a quarterback, you develop him, he sits for a while, and when he's ready to play, you play him. You don't wait. So, Mike, remember, you may not remember this, but it's really kind of emblazoned, you know, in my head. I remember the weekend of the draft when Jordan Love was taken. And on Sunday, after the draft was over, I got Gutekunst on the phone. And I asked him, I said, man, you know, I think your quarterback, Aaron Rodgers, still has some prime left. And what happens if Aaron Rodgers is really good and you never end up playing Jordan Love? If Aaron Rodgers keeps the job another 4, 5, 6 years, and he goes, if that happens, that'll be good for the Packers. And look, there's a lot of people who will say that the last 3 years overall have been okay for the Packers, but not great. I would dispute that. I would just simply say that your quarterback won 2 MVPs. Your quarterback led this team to 2 top seeds in the NFC. And I totally understand that they did not play well in either of the final games at Lambeau Field. That, you know, either against Tampa, the year that Tampa Bay won the Super Bowl, or against San Francisco, you know, last season. And I get it. So everybody is disappointed, and we're ready to move on from Aaron Rodgers. I do not think it's a bad idea to move on from Aaron Rodgers, especially with the deal that Brian Gutekunst got, because he got an excellent deal for Aaron Rodgers based on a guy who's entering his age 40 season. But what I am saying is that although I definitely think it was the right decision to make, and it was the right deal to make, to swap out Aaron Rodgers in favor of Jordan Love, that guarantees nothing. And though the history says, hey, after some struggles with Brett Favre, you had a Hall of Fame quarterback. After some struggles with Aaron Rodgers in 2008, you had a Hall of Fame quarterback. I have no idea what Jordan Love is going to be. Neither do you, neither does Brian Gutekunst. You can have confidence, but that is one of the great mysteries. Mike, you know what? One of the 5 great stories of this NFL season, no matter what happens, can Jordan Love walk, chew gum, and play quarterback at a high level at the same time?
And when you consider Aaron Rodgers, it took him a while to get going. 2008 wasn't spectacular. By 2009, they were in the playoffs. They lost in the wild card round, an epic roller coaster game where he actually had his face mask yanked when he fumbled the ball that was scooped up by, I believe, either Carlos Dansby applied the face mask or recovered the ball and took it in, or both. And then next year, he's Super Bowl MVP. It shows you how quickly the light can come on. And for the Packers, they expect that Jordan Love is going to have some sort of ascension. They don't know what the ceiling is. Nobody knows what the ceiling is. We never know what the ceiling is for any quarterback. But they saw enough in Love to trade up to get him. Now, their plan back in 2020 was Plan A, Justin Jefferson. Plan B, Brandon Ayuk. Plan C, we trade up and we get Jordan Love. So it's not like they had been eyeballing him as this guy that was a can't-miss superstar that they had to go get. They were looking at the receiver position before they decided Jordan Love is our guy, and now we all find out this year. And back to that Chiefs game, just for folks who are wondering, he was 19 for 34 that day, 190 passing yards, averaged 5.59 yards per attempt. That's to Peter's dink and dunk point. And Matt LaFleur, the coach of the team, this was a point I think Sims made earlier in the week when we were discussing Jordan Love. He has said he regrets what he did by way of calling that game. He may have been a little too cautious with Jordan Love and not operate with that kind of go out and let it rip that we saw when he replaced Aaron Rodgers during that Sunday night against the Eagles this past season.
You know, one thing I like when Jordan Love had his press conference, whenever it was last week, I don't remember when it was, but there was one soundbite that I heard that I really liked, and probably nobody paid attention to it other than me. But somebody asked him, how did you feel when Aaron Rodgers signed that gigantic deal? That, look, Mike, you and I, nobody thought that that was a one-year contract with the Packers. That sure didn't look like any typical one-year deal. But and Jordan Love said, you know, and I forget his exact words, but he was disappointed that he wanted to play. And he just thought, well, this is another way that I won't play. And who knows? I'm sure it's going through his mind. Maybe I'm not going to be Green Bay's quarterback. Maybe I'll be the Jets' quarterback. Maybe I'll be Washington's quarterback. Or maybe I'm going to have to go and battle somebody for a job, but maybe I'm not going to be the quarterback here. And, Mike, you know, the one thing, I realize there are certain things that people who look at the Green Bay Packers and who look at Matt LaFleur, they might say, well, look, what is Matt LaFleur really proven? Okay, he's proven he can win when Aaron Rodgers is playing at an MVP level. But, okay, let's see him lift the team up by the bootstraps. And let's see him design game plans for a new quarterback who's never been a full-time starter in the NFL. Let's see how he does now. And I think this is a tremendous opportunity because, look, I know I talk to defensive coaches who scheme against the Packers. And they all, to a person, they all will say, hey, Aaron Rodgers, he's next level, he's this, he's unbelievable. But they really like the way it is schemed there. And, you know, I remember Tom Brady once telling me about the offense in New England where he said, you know, I don't micromanage. I run the plays they call. You know, he's not in the office banging his fist on the desk and say, hey, let's run this. You know, sure, he'll talk to Josh McDaniels and before that to Bill Belichick. But I think it's the same way in Green Bay, that Aaron Rodgers had some wants, had some wishes, but he did not micromanage this offense. That was Matt LaFleur's baby. And so to me, I really think this is a great opportunity, not only for Jordan Love, but for Matt LaFleur to show that he is right up there with the McVays, and that I can take a young quarterback and I can finish molding him into a good to excellent NFL starting quarterback. I'm sure that that's going through the mind of Matt LaFleur.
Well, and I also think, Peter, that Matt LaFleur has proven himself in a different sort of way. 13 wins in three straight seasons, despite being the guy caught in the middle of the dysfunction that existed openly, eventually, between Aaron Rodgers and the front office. And dating back to 2019, his first season, Aaron Rodgers launches a very calculated effort in the media to pressure Matt LaFleur to give Aaron Rodgers more freedom at the line of scrimmage. The audible thing was a thing, and it was calculated, in my opinion, by Rodgers to get his way, to give him the power. And it wasn't that long ago that there were reports that Nathaniel Hackett, one of the reasons things didn't go well for him in Denver last year, he was too deferential to the quarterback because he didn't want a repeat of what he lived through in 2019 when he was the first-year offensive coordinator of the Packers, and he saw the way that Aaron Rodgers didn't like the way things were going, the way he asserted himself and the issues it caused. Matt LaFleur's got none of that now with Jordan Love. Matt LaFleur's got clean slate, run the offense the way I want. I don't have to worry about the delicate genius telling me what he wants and how he wants it. I have a guy who's going to do what I want, how I want. You know, a lot of people have the Packers as down this year. I think the Packers are going to be just fine, in large part because so many people think they're going to be down. I think they're going to surprise people, Peter. And I think we're going to see why they were able to win 13 games three straight years when Matt LaFleur was trying to fend off all this stuff that was going on within the Packers organization.
Mike, you know, one of the things, and I remember looking at this at the end of the year, and look, I'm not somebody who looks at a number and says, man, this is awful, this is terrible, this is this. But I think people have to understand what happened in 2022 in Green Bay. And, you know, I remember being in training camp and watching Aaron Rodgers try to get familiar with Christian Watson, Aaron Dobbs, and obviously he had new important receivers. And I think we realized something about, you were harping on it from the start, but I think we realized something about the importance of an off-season program. Because, you know, nobody has talked about this, and I don't think it's the be-all, end-all stat. But, Mike, did you know that last year, in his starting career for the Green Bay Packers, last year, Aaron Rodgers had his worst year in two categories. One, passing yards per game. Two, passer rating. He had the lowest passer rating of his starting career, 91-something. And he threw for 217 passing yards a game. You know, what's amazing is that Aaron Rodgers played all season, a 17-game season. And he threw for whatever it was, 3,600 yards. And that is unbelievable to me that Aaron Rodgers would have that kind of year. And when you think about how different a year that had been from just very recently, you just say, okay, we're proven right. It's time to move on. Mike, I want to just say one final thing about Rodgers in Green Bay. I believe that Brian Gutekunst in the winter made every effort, and I mean every effort, to try to build one final bridge for one final season with Aaron Rodgers. And he tried to build that bridge, and on the other side, the form of architecture that Brian Gutekunst was trying just didn't work with Aaron Rodgers. And the Packers became convinced, I believe, I'll always believe this, that the Packers became convinced, look, if Rodgers is not eager about coming back, if he's not willing to meet us halfway, whatever, then it's time to go. There's no sense in crying over this, but it's time to go. So let's go out and make our best deal. And quite honestly, Mike, I said it again a few minutes ago. All right, I'll say it again after I said it a few minutes ago. I just think that the deal that the Green Bay Packers made to get pick whatever it was, 42 or 43 this year, and if Rodgers is healthy, to get a one in next year's draft, is just, for a guy entering his age 40 season, and to offload a huge amount of that salary cap damage. Look, Mike, after they are on the hook for $40 million in dead money this year, which is not nothing, as you know, obviously. But honestly, with the money that Jordan Love is making at the low end of the quarterback spectrum, you can afford to take that haircut for one season. And then next year, they'll be back at ground zero and able to build an absolutely normal team. So I just think this worked out pretty well for the Green Bay Packers.
And to put one final point on it, Peter, it started, in your opinion, or at least in your estimation, a year ago as just another effort by me to create some urgency in May when I was harping on the absence of Aaron Rodgers as all of these new receivers need to get up to speed post Devontae Adams. But you made the point during the season that after the 2022 campaign ends, the Packers need to say, we need you here next year. If you're going to do this, we need to do this right. And to the point you just made, I suspect that they got the impression, based on all these issues in tracking him down and this whole goofy thing that he now says, well, you know, my Wi-Fi doesn't work or my cell signal isn't good or whatever bogus excuse he was making to make it look like it
wasn't his fault
and it's all the Packers. It was completely ridiculous. But they got the impression during these struggles to try to get the guy on the phone, he's never going to give us the commitment we need. To your point from last year, he's never going to be here. He's never going to do the things that we need to have one last great season from him. So let's take what we can and move on.
It was over in Green Bay. Sometimes you have to know that. And no matter what happens this year, and no matter whether Aaron Rodgers is MVP with the New York Jets and Jordan Love flames out and, you know, is benched by Thanksgiving, no matter what happens, sometimes in life, it's time to move on. This was one of those times. The Green Bay Packers were the adults in the room, and they said basically, listen, it's time to go. It's time for Aaron Rodgers to go and have the second chapter of a great career. And, you know, look, I remember, and Mike, I remember this vividly, the enmity that Brett Favre felt for the Packers in 2008. And you always would wonder, how can Favre ever step foot back in Lambeau? And then, Mike, he comes in wearing the purple of the Minnesota Vikings. How in the world, twice that happened, that he walks into Lambeau and people are burning his jersey in the parking lot, his old Packers jersey. So I remember just thinking to myself, man, it's going to be about 2047 before Favre ever walks back into Lambeau and they put his name in the ring next to Paul Hornung and Vince Lombardi and Jim Taylor. But honestly, Mike, you know what happens in football? I'm constantly reminded of what a short-term memory that everyone has. And I'll tell you this story. I remember when Jerry Rice, I think he was 42 years old, was in Denver Broncos training camp. And he looked every bit of 42. And Mike Shanahan, I remember, he knew he was going to have to cut Jerry Rice unless he, you know, just said, okay, I understand, it's time to go. And the day that I was at training camp, he was being covered by a free agent cornerback from the Mid-American Conference. And I just said to myself, this is not going to take long. And everybody on the outside is saying, Jerry Rice is ruining his legacy. It's awful. It's terrible. And I will guarantee you, 6 years later, when he's on the podium in Canton, Ohio, with his yellow jacket on, his gold jacket on, and he's talking about and they're introducing him as the greatest receiver of all time and all that, and everything is wonderful, and Eddie DeBartolo is sitting there, and Montana, and all that stuff. If you had taken a poll and said, what was Jerry Rice's last NFL team? What uniform did he wear last? I will bet 98 out of 100 people, even in the shrine of football, in the audience that day, would not have known it was the Denver Broncos. And my only point about all this is, Brian Gutekunst, Aaron Rodgers, they're not going out for dinner anytime soon. But at some point, Brian Gutekunst is going to stand there on the field along with Matt LaFleur, whoever is the head coach at the time, and Mark Murphy, or whoever is the team president at the time, and they're going to shake hands, and they're going to tell the crowd, let's go, everybody up, everybody up. And they won't even need that motion, Mike, because everyone at Lambeau Field will be on their feet cheering for Aaron Rodgers, because they won't remember the silly argument over testing positive. They won't remember all the Joe Rogan stuff. They won't remember, oh, I didn't have cell service in my house. They won't remember that. You know what they'll remember? They'll remember him shredding a defense and winning the Super Bowl and making that great pass to Greg Jennings in said Super Bowl and going to Chicago in the NFC Championship game and slaying the Bears. And that's what people are going to remember, because we are inclined to remember the good things, the positives. And I believe at the end of the day, 8, 9, 10 years from now, when Rodgers is on that field, that is what people will remember.
The same year the Packers drafted Jordan Love in round one, they used a second round pick, 62nd overall, on A.J. Dillon. And he has played far more extensively than Love has over the past 3 years. Yesterday, Packers running backs coach Ben Sermon said that Dillon didn't have the type of production they wanted last year. He had 770 rushing yards in his third season, 4.1 yards per carry. I think he's going to come out and respond to that challenge, Sermon said about Dillon. They still have Aaron Jones. They had to rework his contract because he was getting into the phase of a veteran running back contract where it just doesn't make financial sense for the team. Now they need Dillon to really have the kind of year that will be the complement to Jordan Love. Two guys who came in together, now they're going to be on the field together. I still don't think Dillon will be the starter, but we'll see him play a lot, Peter. This is right. A prove-it year for A.J. Dillon.
Well, not only that, Mike, but look at the offense that they're going to have to run. It's no longer dishing out the game plan on Wednesday and handing it to everybody virtually in their tablets. But it's not only, it isn't only looking at the game plan and saying, well, you know, well, how's Aaron Rodgers going to win this game for us this week? This is more of, in my opinion, a really complete team that is going to have to rely on the running game. And Mike, I would not be surprised at all if the Green Bay Packers are a top three, maybe even a top one rushing team. We always think about the Baltimore Ravens. We think about the Steelers. You know, we think about some of the really good running teams. And I look at it in a way that I think this is going to be a much more egalitarian offense for the Green Bay Packers this year than it has been in the past.
I agree with you completely, and that takes the pressure off Jordan Love, allows for more pressure to be put on a defense when they don't know where it's coming from. The run, short passing game, deep passing game, they've got all the weapons to make it work. It's just a matter of cooking it all up and having it happen. So let's do this. As we acknowledge, given that the Packers are saying so, that A.J. Dillon is a guy who needs to step it up in 2023, a pop-up draft on this Friday, PFT Live. A combo, and Daniel Jones cannot be an answer to this one, Peter, because it's only running backs who need to show me something in 2023. Yeah. Pop-up running back, show me something draft. I'll give you the first selection.
Well, Mike, you know, the one guy who I think really, and this is going to sound odd, because I don't even think he's going to get the first carry for his team. But one of the reasons that the Eagles are not really stressing what happened to them last year is Kenneth Gainwell played well down the stretch. He played very well in the playoffs, and he proved that he can handle more of the load than he had ever been asked to handle in Philadelphia. I think you're going to see Kenneth Gainwell this year become, if not a sole number one, I think he's going to be close to a co-number one in a talented stable of running backs in Philadelphia.
Yeah, they added DeAndre Swift after the Lions used the 12th overall pick on Alabama running back Jahmyr Gibbs, but they've got plenty of guys they can count on, but somebody needs to step up and be the number one guy. I like that one. One of the continuing themes in recent weeks has been, what are the Vikings going to do with Dalvin Cook? It feels like it's a matter of time before he's gone. He's gone from their Twitter header, replaced by my first selection, Alexander Mattison. He's got 4 years in the NFL. He has performed well in the games when Dalvin Cook is injured, but he doesn't have that home run threat, that ability to break it and just go, right, like we see Cook do. Madison needs to step it up this year. He needs to run hard. He needs to get faster if that's physically possible, given the 4 years he has in the NFL. But he's the guy now in Minnesota. Doesn't have a huge contract, but he's clearly going to be the guy, and he needs to step up and give the Vikings that running game to balance out their passing game.
Mike, my next guy is going to be Bijan Robinson. There has been a tremendous, there's been an overload of information about Bijan Robinson. I dare say that Bijan Robinson in this draft was more famous and more anticipated than Saquon Barkley was 4 years ago. And the reason I say that is because I think people look at Bijan Robinson as a guy who can also be a slot receiver. And as Steve Sarkisian, the coach at Texas, told me a month or so ago, he had the best hands on our team. And if we needed to, if we had a need, he could have easily played in the slot for us. And so I think Arthur Smith in Atlanta is looking at Bijan Robinson as a guy who not only will be used in the backfield, but will be used consistently in 4 and 5 wide receiver sets. And I'll just say one other thing. Not a lot of pressure on Bijan Robinson, because remember, last year, Tyler Allgeier sort of came out of nowhere. The big, thumping A.J. Dillon kind of back, physical back. And he was over 1,000 yards for the Atlanta Falcons. And I think what you're going to see this year is you're going, and one of the reasons I'm bullish on the Atlanta Falcons and why, hey, this is a story for another day, but I think the NFL is going to regret not putting the Atlanta Falcons on primetime. I just think that that is an opportunity missed. Can you imagine on the field at the same time, Tyler Allgeier, Bijan Robinson, Drake London, Jonnu Smith, Kyle Pitts? I mean, if Desmond Ridder is competent, that team can put up 28 points a game. And so I like Bijan Robinson and whatever role he's going to fill in this offense, but it's going to be a significant one.
You mentioned all those names, and you didn't mention Cordarrelle Patterson. He's there, too. It's amazing.
Oh, the NFL, you're right about that. My fault.
They can still rectify. Yeah. They can still rectify the situation by flexing the Falcons to a Sunday or a Monday night late in the season. The Falcons play their way into that consideration. Next one for me, I'm going to go J.K. Dobbins, the Ravens running back, who had
a very promising rookie season.
Good. Torn ACL, training camp, second year. Last year, is he ready? Is he not ready? He had a couple hundred yards. I think this is the year. This is it. Up or out for him. He either secures his future in Baltimore and cements his name as one of the top running backs, or it's just not going to happen for J.K. Dobbins. So this is it for him.
You know, I'll give you one that is you're probably going to just raise your eyebrows and say, you got to be kidding me. But I'm going to give you Rashad White of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And to me, the reason is, okay, Rashad White, they had an awful running game last year in Tampa. But I think one of the things that the Buccaneers have done, and I don't think the Buccaneers are going to be very good. Obviously, I had them ranked 31st in my rankings last week. But they have to, I mean have to, be able to run the ball. And I think that has been part of what this offseason has been about for Todd Bowles and that offensive coaching staff, because they need somebody to take the pressure off, you know, a new quarterback in Baker Mayfield and receivers that, quite honestly, have gotten physically worn down at the end of years. So I think Rashad White is going to get plenty of chances, and he must come through for Tampa to not be, you know, at the bottom of that division.
Plenty of talk before the draft about what they expect from him. They didn't go out and add someone who would undermine White's status. There was some talk if Bijan Robinson lingered at 19, they would take him. Obviously, he didn't. I agree with you. White's going to have every opportunity. Last one for me. Mentioned Dalvin Cook earlier. How about James Cook, his younger brother, who's entering year number 2 with the Buffalo Bills? He's currently estimated to be the top guy. on the depth chart with Devin Singletary gone. Damian Harris is in. Latavius Murray is in. Naheem Hines is still there. They just don't use him offensively. Cook has the opportunity to become the running back the Bills desperately need to balance out the Josh Allen-centric offense. Cook could be the guy. He's in the building. He did well last year. They like him. This is his opportunity to build the kind of legacy that his brother Dalvin did in Minnesota. Okay, we need to take a break because we're already an hour into the program. Before we go, though, Peter has given us not one but two SAT words on this first segment. Enmity is the first one. I believe we have the definition handy for enmity. Some of you may not be aware of that one. I had heard of that one. I don't use it frequently. The state or feeling of being actively opposed or hostile to someone or something. Enmity. Also egalitarian, which I also am aware of. I just don't regularly use it in a sentence. Peter gave us that.
I love egalitarian. And that's one still of my favorite words. I don't know why.
We've still got a full hour for more. Let's take a break. We'll have more Friday PFT Live for you right after this.